Welcome to 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, I am very excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And actually, I'm especially excited because this is a special edition of the show for two main reasons. First of all, it's going to be on video, so if you're not yet following Mile High Sports on YouTube, please do so and come and watch this episode. And you're going to want to watch it because not just for the spring training footage and some statistics that I put up during the conversation, but I think you're going to want to see today's guest. Mark Knudsen and I were able to sit down for a good 35 minutes with Clint Hurdle. And so you're going to want to hear all of that. I'm going to tell you that we talked about some of the prospects at spring training right now. Actually, most of the prospects at spring training right now. Talked a bit about pitching philosophy at Coors Field. Touched on all kinds of topics, including his new book, Hurdleisms, which you can find for sale at bookstores everywhere. So you're going to want to get involved with that conversation on more than just the podcast. Make sure you head over to the YouTube page and you go ahead and watch this one. But before we get into our conversation with Clint Hurdle, I do have to tell you about our friends at Bet Online, the world's most trusted betting platform and your number one source for betting on all of the madness. Whether you're a seasoned fan or a first-time bettor, Bet Online is your ultimate game day companion. With the largest selection of odds on everything from college basketball to $200,000 bracket contest, Bet Online continues to be your number one source for betting. Everything from the Cinderella story to every hat trick, BetOnline has you covered with odds, stats, and more for every game, every play, and every win. BetOnline, the game starts here. All right, everybody listening, or again, watching this, certainly knows that Clint Hurdle was the manager of your Colorado Rockies from 2002 to 2009, and he was the manager of the Rockies during the only time they made it to the World Series. The best season in franchise history, of course, Rocktober of 2007. You may also be well aware that he spent most of his playing days in the 80s with the Kansas City Royals, and that he spent some time after Colorado in Texas going to a World Series with the Rangers out there, doing particularly famous, I think, for those of us that followed it, work with Josh Hamilton during his time becoming a super-duper star when Texas was going to back-to-back World Series, even though they didn't happen to get one until just recently. And then, perhaps the most impressive stint of his career, which was going out to Pittsburgh and turning a Pirates team that had been long struggling, long suffering, not even able to make the postseason. They had a hard time getting just to 500 for over 10 years in a row. Clint Hurdle goes out there, institutes kind of culture change. They start making the postseason every year. Of course, Andrew McCutchen in running for MVP. Those are some really fantastic Pirates teams out there. And since he's left, they've really struggled to kind of refine that magic. Obviously, now he's back with your Colorado Rockies in an assistant to the GM role. And it's one of those things that we talk a lot around these parts about whether or not the Rockies hear enough from outside the organization. And I have long been of two minds on that one, they need outside voices, but two, institutional memory in a place where the uniqueness, particularly of Coors Field, is so difficult to come up with that I don't know that you need people who are completely new to trying to solve the problem, solving the problem. I've long seen Clint Hurdle as kind of a best of both worlds scenario, and I'm really happy they got him back into the organization. And you'll see some of those things in our conversation today as to why, because he does have both perspectives. Somebody who's experienced success in other places and seen how they do it in other places and can bring some of those ideas to the team, but also someone who has a fundamental, inherent, lived experience of knowing how difficult and unique baseball at altitude, Coors Field, whatever you want to call it, the to and from, the hangover effect, that he understands all of that as well. But let's get done. We're done listening to me talk. Let's throw it over to our interview with Clint Hurdle. All right, Clint, we thank you so much for joining us. And I got to start with the really hardcore journalistic question. Where are you and what are you doing right now, or really these days? What's going on with Clint Hurdle right now?
Well, these days, I'm in Scottsdale, back in Scottsdale, my second trip to spring training. I was here for the beginning of camp, first few games, onboarding a lot of young players for the first time at Major League Camp, guys that I've had eyes on for the last 3 years, and then we'll be starting our minor league spring training games Tuesday. So I'm here to watch us kickstart that and get it going. So I'm busy, and we're looking forward to unleashing our minor leaguers out there on the playing field now. They've been practicing, and they're ready to go.
You're getting your minor leaguers out there just as the Dodgers are closing up spring training here in a few couple of days. Amazing.
Yeah, the Cubs are closing up as well. I talked to Mark Strittmatter, former coach of mine there in Colorado, now with the Cubs. It's crazy now, isn't it, that you closed up spring training, what, on the
next week, 11th. Next Tuesday.
Yeah, on the 11th. They'll go over there and play, and then they'll actually come back.
So I always say when anyone's going down, especially for the first time, that the biggest life hack of going to spring training is getting out to the backfields and watching all those minor leaguers play. It's great. You can watch around. You can watch like four ball games at a time. You can do all that. But that's for someone who's wandering around asking questions, having some fun, getting to know people. Is that a little bit chaotic for you? Four ball games at one time?
I stopped that process a long time ago.
Yeah.
And what I do is I watch one game. I don't rotate from field to field to field. I put all my attention on one game. Then the next day I'll go to another field and watch another group of men play. But it helps me stay locked in. I do. It's overwhelming for me when I just keep bouncing around and trying to almost, chase good or hunt good or try and leverage good. I just kind of better off when I sit on one field and watch what I watch, see what I see.
Who's jumping out at you already? And you've just been watching them practice?
With our major league camp?
No, minor league guys.
Minor league camp? Yeah. Well, there's some kids I'm looking forward to see play. I mean, some of the kids are just coming down from the big league camp now.
Yeah.
But we've got a young Latin outfielder, Robert Claus, who's a good looking player. He checks all the boxes, from that scouting eye.
Yep.
But I got to watch him play last year. He won the Triple Crown down here last year. So it's not like I'm throwing, I'm sticking my neck at him. I'm taking a chance on this guy. We've got two young Andy Lopez. We're watching play a young shortstop, second baseman, third baseman, played in Fresno and Spokane last year. We've got a Cuban shortstop again. We've got a lot of shortstops, and we got another one coming.
Yeah,
the switch hitting guy from Puerto Rico. We've still got good outfielders, that are strong and young and can run. The young pitching, though, is probably the thing that continues to grab my eye. We've done a diligent job. The first 2 years I was here, we drafted a number of pitchers. And sometimes, if you throw a big enough net, you're going to catch some fish. We've got some good guys in play. Jackson Cox is coming back. Gabe Hughes is already back at big league camp from their arm setbacks. Jared Candy's a kid that I'm going to watch and enjoy. Mahoney, Sean Sullivan. I mean, there's 10 or 12 guys that we think have the potential to pitch in the big leagues that are coming.
Speaking of Sullivan, when you've got a guy like that, because some of these guys, you can pop the certain numbers, the radar gun, the spin factor. We've got all this stuff these days. I'm really intrigued by a couple of these guys, and Palmquist has been another one. Some of these guys who are just location low, but especially Sullivan, who just refuses to walk people. Like, how intriguing and fun is that to kind of work with and to help mold?
Well, it is, and there's so much deception and delivery. Plus, the kids, for lack of a better term, he's got guts and nuts when he takes them out. As Mark can tell you, with Palmquist and with Sean, these guys don't mind shoving the ball in on right-handed hitters. Mm-hmm. They're not pitching away from the bat. They're not pitching away from contact. They're throwing strikes, as you said. They're challenging people. They've got, Palmquist has got a very impressive package of pitches. Where Sean, still developing his package of pitches, the velocity's never going to put a black eye on you, but there's so much deception. There's so much deception. The ball carries its line. It stays up. Guys swing under it a lot because they think it's going to, it's not a two-seamer. It's not sinking. But again, I think the factor that we've done a very good job as the kind of kid we're drafting, the person that's inside the skill set, these young men, they're tough. They don't care a lot about history. They honor the history of the Rockies organization. But truthfully, every kid that we've got that's come up since I've been here, they're talking about rewriting Rocky's history, moving up.
Hey, I gotta mention this though, Clint. For years, the narrative has been you got to have swing and miss stuff at Coors Field. You can't necessarily pitch to contact at Coors Field because it's so big, blah blah blah, all that stuff. Is that turning around again? Are we starting to get to the point? Well, listen, we got to pitch to contact because it can't walk people.
I think you're on to something there. Basically, what we've done though is we kind of took a step back and said, we're going to meet these pitchers where they are. Some of them got swing and miss stuff. Some of them don't. But if we like the man, we've watched the insides, the head and the heart, along with the stuff, project them, growing, getting bigger and stronger. I think we've got a best assortment of different types of arms. And I think one of the important things I've always talked about, and I share here, is filling up the clock. Like if you have a clock and it runs from 9 to 3, you got arm slots all from 9 to 3, you know, all different spots. That's another thing we've done characteristically well so far is the different slots that we've got balls coming out of from guys. Carlos Torres was a low drop, had a real good fall league. Evan Justice put together a nice fall league. Been a mixed bag earlier on him. He was an older kid that we rushed through the system, but he's starting to get his feet on the ground. Zach Agnos is a very interesting guy. He's like the old closer with 4 pitches. I mean, he's got a tool bag that he can work with. Some games he'll get some punch outs, and some days they're just, you know, 4 balls in on the ground, maybe a couple fly balls, but they're miss hits. He controls the barrel very well.
He's got old closer facial hair as well, which we really appreciate. I'm into it. Speaking of, while we're on the bullpen and talking about that, you know, there were a couple of young guys last year in Vodnik and Halvorsen who went from, you know, kind of maybe long shots to make the team or whatever, you know, Halvorsen obviously is different, to closing ball games by the end of the year. That's got to be a rush as a young player to get those opportunities. But God, both guys really stepped up and did some interesting things. What is your read on where those players are at this point?
Well, Halvorsen's a guy, I mean, he lets it eat. He's no muss, no fuss. He's coming at you. And it's usually 3 digits. He's developing his breaking ball. To change up, he's also throwing. The guy that, you know, I enjoyed watching, Victor, he was another guy that we got, 2 years ago, the trade deadline in those drafts, and we got Mason Albright. We got Van Scoy. We got him. We landed 4 or 5 pitchers that we feel very, very confident about that have joined, you know, our group, Tanner Gordon, another one. That have joined our group. Some have already seen big league experience. Some are going to see big league experience. But with Victor, Victor's an old school kind of closer too, because there's not a lot of trickery. You know, he's going to throw a slider, but he's going to throw his fastball. He's basically been a 2-pitch guy. He challenges you. Both those guys learned valuable lessons last year. I think that opportunity to get innings at the major league level in meaningful games for other teams, you know, because we were closing out and playing some games with some playoff implications for the teams we were playing against. You know, what better situation for both those guys? I mean, big saves, and then you lose one the next time in front of 50,000 people in Dodger Stadium. You can't replicate that kind of experience anywhere else.
We haven't talked much about the starters yet. Chase Dolander's had a little rough time with his control recently down in spring training. Where do you see these young starters fitting in this season? Obviously, you probably not start the year with a big club, but are these guys we'll see at Coors Field this year?
I think there's a good opportunity based on need. The one thing I know we will do is once they go down, whoever it is goes down, you know, they're going to have to pitch well to get back up, and they're going to have to go down with a game plan on what they learned in spring training. Dolander, for me, the 4 walks the other day, for me, that's more of an outlier. I'm looking more forward to see how he bounces back his next outing.
Yeah.
He was on a fast track in HOV lane last year. You know, he made 2 big moves. Pitching, throwing strikes wasn't a challenge. It's a different time for him. And sometimes just the thought, you know, because it was made public, it was out there. You know, you pitch well, you got a chance. Maybe put too much pressure on himself. I haven't talked to him yet. I normally like to give a pitcher a couple days after that kind of outing before we even chat him up.
Good idea.
Yeah.
A couple things I learned along the way. But we'll see. I mean, Dolander, I expect him to be a major player, you know, in the future for us. But right now, good health for Senzatella and Marquez would be awesome, for Freeland, for Gomber, and Feltner. I mean, there's 5 guys that have all shown the ability to pitch good ball games, in Coors Field, in the National League, in the major leagues. And right now they're all healthy. And right now they're competing pretty well.
Yeah, I think the one guy in this as a from the minor league standpoint that really strikes me as a wild X factor, and I haven't been able to see him much because he hasn't been out there much, is Brody Brett, right? That pick was something where I think you look at that guy and you go, man, a lot of rawness there, but some tools, and that could be somebody where some of the, you know, you don't know how he profiles. I feel like you've probably got a better idea than I do at this point. But what are you seeing there?
Because I'm a big fan of Brody because he's a Lion fan. You know, we go back. He's been a Lion fan all his life. My life's been a little bit longer, so I've had a little bit more history.
Most Lions fans have been living a long time, right?
That's right.
I was going to say, he's coming around at the right time.
He's coming around. There's no doubt about that. You know, Dolander, when we signed him, he took that summer off. He had thrown innings. Brody didn't pitch last year competitive ball. Went worked out over the winter. It was like, you know, getting him out there now. We just got to hope he can maintain some, you know, some consistency, some composure. Not trying to get it all done in a day. But he's got electric stuff. He's fun to watch. Again, he's got that compete tool that we see in a lot of our young pitchers. They're focused. They're looking to dominate. They're not just looking to get by.
Let's shift gears a little bit and start talking about the offense, because the one thing I want to talk to you as a former hitting coach, 10 strikeouts per game last year at the big league level, that's got to eat at you a lot, because it eats at all of us. But as a hitting coach, I know you're not preaching swing up and who cares if you strike out. I know you're not teaching that.
No, and Hensley isn't either. And unfortunately, you know, whether it's a combination of things that put 10 strikeouts on the board every night. And sometimes it's just guys saying, I don't want to strike out, and losing their aggressive nature.
Yeah.
You know, because the mind can't comprehend don't. All it comprehends is strike out. But for three innings, to watch the other team play catch for three innings, you know, it takes three offensive innings off the board when you punch out 9-10 times a night. And nobody's happy about it. And I think we've talked – I know we had early sessions about what kind of offense we want to have, what kind of offense we want to create, what's the mindset, what's the mission statement, how these men are going to approach it. All of them are aware of the fact that walking back to the dugout isn't a positive reaction to your at-bat. So they're all working on different ways to make better contact, to be more impactful with their contact, to do a better job in run scoring situations, just playing offensive fundamental baseball. That was probably the one that hurt the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the runner on third with less than two outs, there's a league average and there was our average. And we were not even close to being, you know, what we need to be competitive. Because there's a thought out there, well, you know, don't get the two strikes. Every big leaguer's almost half his at-bats come with two strikes. You get the two strikes, but it's how you get there more often than not. And then what you can do when you get the two strikes. Some people, I still am a firm believer, some guys need to make a physical change. There needs to be a little widening of the stance. There needs to be up on the knob a little
choke
bit.
Choke up a little bit.
You know,
you sound I'm like still, you sound like the guy in the background here over his shoulder, Dante Bichette. That was Dante's approach.
There's no doubt. He developed. You saw how many times. Sometimes you just flick the bat at and dump something in the right field.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, with our minor leaguers, I keep telling them, I go, guys, we're not shooting threes. All right. With our at bats, we're not shooting threes. There's no such thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to maximize our at bats. The better at bats we have, the better at bats our teams. I mean, just it's simple, but it's not easy. But I do think at the end of the day, it's a mindset.
Yeah.
You know, it's guts and nuts. It's getting in there and getting after it. And just being competitive and having I'm not going to walk back this time. I'm going to find a way to put that ball in play, because when you put it in play, there's no telling what can happen.
Especially at Coors Field, yep.
Yes, sir.
Somebody who had that mindset and was very good at it, and I thought, man, it'd be nice if the rest of the guys on the team emulated him, has now moved into a role where he's advising in Charlie Blackmon. What have you seen from him in that role, and is that something that maybe – you know, now that he's not taking all of his BP, because you still got to worry about yourself and you keep yourself up, that now that he can kind of focus on the other guys, can he maybe play a role in that mindset? You know, he's got the respect of every single guy wearing that uniform.
Well, he does. Todd Helton does. I mean, Helton didn't like striking out. He'd rather give him a small body part than punch out.
Right. Right.
Charlie and I were ships passing in the night here. I left. He came in. I'm back. He's gone. But talking with Bill, talking with some of the players that he's able to interact with, you know, that street cred that only Charlie Blackman has, that only Todd Helton has. I don't have that kind of street cred with these guys. It's more impactful when it comes from a teammate, when it comes from somebody who has done it for as long as they have at the major league level and been as successful as they have. And I think one of Charlie's components is going to rub off on a lot of our young players. He is meticulous in his preparation. And they got to hear that this spring already. I mean, we've got to see it. And from what I heard in him in the meetings asking questions, you know, he's just on the scene as a new coach, a new advisor, and he's already asking questions. Him and I will probably, I'll reach out to him the end of spring, find out if he wants to travel some of the minor league parks, where he wants to go. I'll try and probably onboard him on some of my travels as well. I'm really looking forward to spending some time with him and obviously turning him loose on our players.
I'm sure he's found his way into the batting cage on a couple occasions. No, Charlie, it's tough to give it up.
It's the smell. You know,
yeah.
You
go. That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's good. Let's talk about some of the other guys in the mix to get regular playing time. There's competition, healthy competition for playing time on this team, especially in the outfield. There are guys that are trying to win a job. Who stood out in that regard and who maybe has an upper hand at this point?
Well, I don't know. Upper hand, I don't know. I just know that Bean's getting reps. Beck's getting reps. Nolan Jones, you know, he wants to find out, which player was he? Was he the player from 2 years ago or the player last year? He believes he's the player from 2 years ago. Some of those distractions are gone. Not that he ever used them as excuses, but it's time to play baseball. And sometimes we lose sight of that when life can get in the way. And, you know, Doyle is being Doyle.
Yeah.
He has shown up on a mission. You know, he's very stoic. He wants more. He leads by example. And I think, you know, I think Sam was a good sign for us in the offseason based on what he did last year to be that extra outfielder. I think he's got, you know, an upper hand on most people. He showed the ability to play center. He swung the bat. There's some better than gap power in the bat. Had one of his finest seasons. He can come off the bench, ride a ball out of the ballpark. But you also got to see Benny Montgomery early. You got to see Yankiel Fernandez. You got to see some of these guys, Sterling Thompson, that we believe are going to impact this major league ballclub.
I got to ask you about a name because I have an extraordinary bias for the guys who can do everything in all sports. I just love it when someone can do everything. And so I'm probably teeing that one up for you there. Cole Kerrig. And I know that we're probably off of the catching thing at this point, it sounds like, but still, just even knowing that it's in his back pocket, that he can be, you know, the e-bug or whatever, but that this guy's doing kind of a switch hitter, center field, shortstop, wherever, all around the diamond, can do a little bit of everything. I'm intrigued by that. Do you worry about jack of all trades, master of none, or is it just let's let this guy see what he can do?
I think it's let him see what he can do. I don't think we've put the catching gear forever away. I think it's there. I think there's times when it'll be dabbled with again. Right now, that's one of the areas where we have some bodies. We have some capable bodies in the catching position. You're talking about a switch hitting guy that can play center field. So, you know, could he go to the corners? I think so, without a doubt. Also, shortstop. He takes balls every day in the infield. Him and Karros are best friends. They love to hate each other some days, and they just love each other's other days.
Didn't he steal the triple crown from him last year? I can't, which one?
Last game of the season, he hit the home run to win the home run title. And Karros will be the guy, I'll tell you, because we had the Rockies Fest, and I asked him all a question, what's something you saw last year that you never thought you'd see in minor league baseball? He said, Cole Kerrig every day. He said, just the way he plays. He's a man, you know, he's almost on fire. He's that guy we've all had. If he's on the other team, you can't stand him. If he's on your team, you're happy he's on your club. He plays to win. He doesn't back down. He doesn't back away. He leads with his chin sometimes, and he'll learn along the way with that as well. But we don't want to take, you know, that spirit out of him or that aggression out of him. He's another guy that plays with a lot of edge, and we welcome edge. We need edge.
I haven't gotten a chance to watch much, but has Drew Romo fixed his throwing issue, throwing the ball back to the pitcher?
Well,
that was really hard to watch last year.
Well, it is, and one of the things I've told everybody, stop watching. Just don't watch it.
Well, you know the other team is.
Well, they are, but the other team still has not just violated this young man with running the bases and stealing bases. It's hard to watch. He has, I think he softened up his release. I think he's firmed it up, whatever you want to call it, cleaned it up. I mean, I know he's done that. But even last year, when guys run, there's no hitch in his get along. There's no.
Yeah, no, you're right. He throws fine when he throws the second. You're right.
And third, so he worked on it over the winter. He started throwing a football, which has helped. He's made some adjustments along those lines. But it reminded me of a time when we were breaking in De La Rosa. And this was when De La Rosa was capable of 30 pitches every inning. And, you know, And I can remember one time Billy Guyvett was there, and I was kind of lamenting watching De La Rosa close the pitch. He goes, just sit back down in the dugout and stop watching. He says, just listen for the noise. Listen for the noise. So I've even shared with guys, I've had catchers that have had, you know, that throwing mishap or whatever it's called, glitch, the yips. And, yeah, the more you focus on it, yeah, the worse it looks.
Yep.
But you don't think the kid knows it? The kid absolutely wakes up thinking about it. He goes to bed thinking about it.
Yep.
And he wants to clean it up as much as anybody. And I think he's done a good job with it.
Is he in the mix right now? Catcher? I mean,
right now, I don't think anything's closed. I think it's Stallings, and it's between Romo and Goodman. I know Nola's getting some reps just because. Yep. But I'm kind of hoping that, you know, one of those two young guys gets to work with Jacob, and Jacob can pour into them a little bit and grow them.
Well, we've seen some of these guys who had big, clear flaws in their game take giant steps forward, and maybe nobody did that better last year than Michael Tolia, where you looked at it and you go, this guy's got to stop striking out every at-bat. he's got to stop striking out every at-bat, and I know it was a lot of back and forth. I know it was tough for him. I'm sure it was tough on all of you guys. But once he came back and it really started to click for him, how did that feel? What was that like? And what's next for him?
Well, I think Michael's going to be a guy you're going to enjoy watching playing there for a number of years. We're so much better defensively with him at first.
Yes, exactly.
And we need to play good defense. And we have a chance of being an above-average defensive club this year.
Better than that, probably. Better than above-average. Really outstanding.
Yeah. We have a chance of being outstanding. You're right. I just like the way that he continued, you know, whether it was a reluctance to be more aggressive, because I think we learned a lesson the hard way. They can throw it in better spots up here than they ever did in college or in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
Some of these pitches he was taking early and getting out to it, he needs to swing at. He needs to hit because he's shown the ability to hit the ball from line to line from both sides of the plate.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing that opened it up for him. And then you saw there's power. There's no doubt there's power. But I think he'll tell you also he wants to be a better hitter with power, not just a power hitter.
I like that.
Yeah, you're right about the defense, Clint. Watching him take ground balls, he is just so smooth. Reminds you of Hilton a little bit over there, the way he plays defense, and with him over there, people don't understand. I don't think people understand how important that really is at first base. I think Nolan Arenado could tell you how many runs or errors he was saved by Mark Reynolds and whoever else was playing over at first base with the great plays they can make over there. I don't think the current stats, and I'll leave this to Drew, but the WAR and all those things, I don't think they credit that enough. They don't credit enough defense, you know,
they don't.
Errors saved or whatever they do, because a guy like that is. Let your infielders be themselves and go after things. Let them try things. You know, they don't have to eat a ball that they might want to try to make a throw on because they know the other guy isn't going to catch it. It's huge. And Drew's right. If he can just put the ball in play, he's going to be a huge asset.
Well, you said it right there, Mark. I mean, when you have freedom to play and space to play, you make great plays.
Yep.
You know, we want to be masters of the ordinary play, but we also want to make those other plays every once in a while because we know we can all you got to do is get it over that way, and the other guy's going to handle it.
Yep.
And WAR can't measure that. There's things that, you know, I use this term a lot with our minor league. It's guts and nuts. Yep. You can't put a radar gun on their heart, and you can't shoot 2 feet lower down there and get a reading. I mean, you got to watch it play. When infielders know you got a guy at first base, that kind of guy with a glove, you're willing to do things and try things you normally wouldn't.
Right.
And that's what gives you an opportunity to be great. And all these guys want to, truthfully, most of these guys want to be great infielders. They don't want to be average.
Right. Yeah. I always compared it to securing the rebound in the NBA. I said, you can play great, great defense. You know, this guy out on the perimeter follows every dribble, gets right in the hand of the thing, plays perfect defense. But if you don't secure the rebound, you've just given it right back. You haven't completed the defensive play. To me, first base defense is one of the most underrated things in the sport, especially in the metrics community. Which is actually leads me perfectly into something that I wanted to ask you about, which is just more generally speaking, as the game has grown and evolved over the years, where do you feel like you've grown and evolved over the years? And are there any, particularly in the way of metrics, because it is something I'm very interested in, you know, are there certain things that have really stood out to you as incredibly useful, maybe some stuff that's not so much? Just how much do you find yourself getting into that part of the game?
Well, I was fortunate. After leaving Colorado, being fired, I went to work for the MLB Network the second half of the season. That's when I first got dipped into metrics, because they got a couple gurus there, you know, that are always talking about them, that you see on TV all the time, that were ahead of their time. And then in Texas, we were also somewhat advanced in moving the needle towards analytics and some different numbers to pay attention to. But when I got to Pittsburgh, it was a whole new deal. Neil Huntington, Dan Fox, they had put together a program there that, truthfully, some of it was overwhelming to me. And I kind of moved into it slowly. And the third year, we got to a point where we had two really good starts and then two hard finishes. And we had to find a way to win at the margins more often without throwing money at things, because we didn't have that kind of payroll. And we just laid out all the metrics, all the bullpen leverage, lineup leverage, run prevention, catcher metrics, you know, the steal and the strikes, all the different numbers, the WAR numbers that go with it, you know, pitchers' ERA, expected ERA, ballpark ERA. Some of it was good, and some of it, you know, for me still to this day, I really don't need that. I don't need that. But the one that grabbed me on not knowing what I didn't know and thinking I knew something I really didn't was, we were talking about the lineup. And after 2 years, Neil Huntington and Dan Fox said to me, and I said, give me one of these new school ideas that can sell me, that you can just get me, and that I probably may have overlooked. They go, well, who are you thinking of hitting third this year? And I said, well, Andrew McCutchen. He's hit third the last 2 years. You know, 1 year he's the MVP. He was going to be the MVP in 13, but he had good years, you know, Silver Slugger, this and that. And they go, well, why do you hit him third? I said, well, because the baddest dude on your team hits third. I mean, that's just always the way it's been. Third base, you know, but that's your third hitter is your best hitter.
Yeah.
They go, well, that's interesting. You would say that. And you know what? You're right. It has been that way. Here's something I want you to listen to. Andrew McCutchen has hit the most of any player on our team with nobody on base and two outs in 2 years. The amount of at-bats was staggering. It was like 300 and some. So why would you want the best player on your team put in the hardest situations so many times?
Right.
And it was like, oh, my God, yes, okay, yeah. And I'm kind of kicking myself in the, oh, my God, that makes perfect sense. What else? You know, what else do you have like that? So they slowly started spoon-feeding me. At that time, probably the 13th season, I would say Tampa Bay and us in Pittsburgh were as advanced as any two teams in baseball. But then the information has gotten out to everybody. So it's a level playing field. Now it's
Kyle Schwarber bats lead off.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Ohtani, yeah.
How do you get the information of the players?
Yeah.
Is what makes a difference.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you take all this information. Some of them want it. Some of them don't want any part of it. You got to give it to the coaches, because you want the coaches still to coach the human element along with everything else. So I do think the best teams in baseball are doing a combination of the both. They're using human analytics, and they're using analytics. You still need to be I think you still need to be looking at pitchers' eyes. You know, and you still need to trust your gut. And it's not indigestion that you're looking for, but it's just, you know, actually one of the things I would share with Neil was sometimes the decision I make, Neil, at the end of the night is the one I can sleep with. You know, that I know if it goes wrong, I can sleep with this decision. If it goes wrong, I can't sleep with that one. That one, I can't buy into. So there are things we are doing now that we hadn't been doing for years that our D staff that we've gotten together, Brian Jones is overseeing now and running. We're up to almost a dozen, maybe more members, maybe 15. I sit in on those meetings. I have a bi-monthly workshop on leadership for the people in the analytics department just to help them humanize the game and understand they're dealing with humans. It's just not a computer screen.
Right.
And you've got to understand sometimes what sounds like a good idea in theory, like any pitcher should be able to pitch any inning. Not really, because they're human beings, sure, and they're used to routines and they want routines.
Right.
Before I let you go on this lineup thing, though, I have to ask you, once you move McCutchen to the leadoff spot, He's got, instead of two of your best hitters hitting in front of him, he's got two of your worst hitters hitting in front of him. How much did that, did the two outs and nobody on at bat stat change, or did it change?
It changed a little bit, but I think the idea, whoever hits third is going to usually hit more times with two outs and nobody on than anybody else. Yeah. This is the first inning, could be every time. The way that lineup rotates, one of the ideas with a pitcher hitting eighth and the other hitting ninth was to change that dynamic, another player hitting ninth. But I never hit catch and lead off. I hit in second. And if you'll take all the analytics to get put out, your best two hitters, one hits second, one hits fourth. And then it's usually lead off, and then it's fifth. And your fifth best hitter is usually the guy that hits third nowadays in the lineup, the way it can be broken down.
Yeah.
That's tough to get my arms around, but I believe you.
You don't have to believe me. I mean, it was tough for me to get my arms around, but then I watched it work, and that's what kind of sold me.
Hey, let's talk about your book a little bit before we let you go. I know you're pretty proud of it. We've seen what you've been doing on social media with it. It's gotten a great response so far. How do you feel being an author?
It was nothing that I ever had laid out that, okay, I'm going to write a book someday. Matter of fact, I kept pushing it off. After the 07 season, I had some people in Denver, some accomplished authors in Denver, reach out to co-author a book. Yep. And then in 10, I went to the World Series in Texas, and there were some people that said, hey, you know, you've been to the World Series twice as a manager, hitting coach, there might be a book here. And then Pittsburgh, when we had the three strong years running, of, we were a really good team for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe then, but I never felt compelled to write a book while in uniform or even attempt it. I said, I'll wait until I get out. Well, some of those people, once I got out, they came back to me, said, hey, you said you'd think about it. And I did for a while, but I never found the right mix, because most of them, they had a thought, an autobiography, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, if I was going to be engaged with them, it was going to be about teaching and learning and leadership and sharing lessons that I've learned, mostly at the expense of myself sometimes. And I met with a guy who produced the games in Texas for 40 years, Dave Burchette, and he was an author. He was going to be my co-author. So, Mark, the whole time I'm looking for an easier, softer way. I'm gonna be with a pro that knows what he's doing. He's going to do all the work, and I'm just going to journal things to him, or we're going to spend a weekend at the beach or in the mountains, and we're going to chat. He'll tape everything and then convert it into book stock. Well, we did all that. We worked on a book for 2 years, and then we couldn't find a publisher. And right before we were going to punt, we were going to self-publish, or we were just going to hit pause, Dave said to me, hey, would you please ask your friend John Gordon to read our book? John and I have been friends. He came to camps in Pittsburgh. I've known him for 15 years to read our book and see what he thinks. And it was basically, everybody's response was, two old white guys sharing life lessons as a small demographic. That ain't going to work. John read the book. That's what all the young publishers.
I know. I get it. I'm a new author too. Okay. You're speaking my language.
Is there a market for wisdom? I don't know.
Exactly.
Google that.
Well, that's the point. But when people keep saying no and you can't find a yes, okay, you just got to keep hunting. John read the book and goes, "This got some really good stuff." And he goes, "But Clint, here's my question is, you need to write a book." He said, "You need to write your own book with your personal story, some of your personal story, some of your professional story." He said, "You've said things to me for 15 years that I've written down. I got them in a folder called Hurdleisms." And I'm like, "What? You got what?" He said, "I've been at your camps. I've been with you during the season. I've listened to you talk to your teams." And I said, I gave him 10 reasons why I didn't need to write my own book. And he goes, "So what are you afraid of?" Well, then we got into it a little bit because my fist came up. And I gave him 10 more reasons why I wasn't afraid. And at the end of that, he goes, "So really, what are you afraid of?" And truthfully, you know, I can share with you in transparency, it was, oh my gosh, I've never done this. I've got no foundation for this. I'd hate to fail at this. I definitely don't want to write a crappy book. But these things were holding me back. And finally, John just kind of dared me, said, "You need to go for this." And I did. I wrote every word in that book over a 9-month period.
Oh, that's awesome. We are running out of time here, but I want to ask you more about it next. We got to have you back on sometime, go through some of the hurdleisms, and I restrained myself from not asking a single question about the 2007 season, so I think next time.
We'll come back and do it again.
Yeah. Really appreciate you, Clint. Thank you for taking the time.
You guys are welcome. I'm glad we did this.
Enjoy Scottsdale. Enjoy the nice
morning. I will. Take care, Mark.
All right, Clint. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Once again, I can't thank Clint enough for coming on the show, for talking to us, to being candid and open about his thoughts and feelings, especially even honestly, just as a human being with him talking about being afraid of failure at this stage in his career in a different realm and being an author. But I really find it refreshing and inspiring when I hear other people talk about that, because, you know, after 12 years of covering baseball, sometimes I feel like I shouldn't be afraid to do certain things that I still am. And it's, you hear that and you go, oh yeah, it's just a natural human being thing to be able to do. The trick is you don't let it get in your way. And so you can find Hurdleisms anywhere you're buying your books out there. Get online, Google it, find yourself some Hurdleisms. And like I said, hopefully in the future, we can have him back on, dive a little deeper into the book. That's my only regret about that interview that we had there, is I wanted to ask him about a couple of the Hurdleisms specifically. And as I said, I mean, it'd be fun to talk 2007. It's not particularly relevant to anything right now, but it would be fun. And so hopefully, you know, we'll have him back on maybe sometime during the season, though he's going to get real busy. So we may have to do that in the off season. But whatever time he's willing to give us, we are, of course, very appreciative of. So thanks again to Clint Hurdle. Thanks to my friend Mark Knudsen for setting that up for us. And thanks to all of you for listening. And again, hopefully watching this one on YouTube. Make sure that you are following Mile High Sports on YouTube, on Instagram. You're going to milehighsports.com to check out all the written content as we ramp up and get ready for the 2025 season. Other than that, I can only ever ask that you continue to be absolutely awesome out there. You know that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.